Well, good afternoon to all of you. My wife Sandy and I enjoyed a wonderful feast just up the road a few miles, in the Wisconsin Dells. We had not attended there in 40 years since 1974. Back then we had 13 or 14,000 people. And wow. But the Dells changed so much in the last 40 years as it's just grown up, and there are not only a lot more outdoor facilities and entertainment things and such, but there are indoor, so it makes it usable for much more of the year. We enjoyed the feast greatly. It's just a wonderful blessing. We decided to come down to this area and spend a little time in Chicago the next few days, because we've been in and out of the airport a few times but have never taken time to see some of the highlights. Well, I hope that you had a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. How many of you attended at the Dells? Let's see what number there. Okay, how many of you attended other than at the Dells, at some other site? Wow. Okay. Maybe two-thirds, one-third, something, some kind of break like that. Wherever it was, I'm sure that it was a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. This year was special in a number of ways for me. I guess we can say every year is special in ways, but it was number 50 feast for me, opportunities. I spent about 8 years while I was growing up not being able to attend, but understanding more each year about the feast days of God. And about 4 years before I got out of high school, my family waved goodbye as they went off to attend the feast. As during that 8 years, my folks were called and baptizing tour, and they attended the feast each year. They kept that instruction and commandment to do so, but we were farming, and we had certain problems with making the arrangements. That is, we were milking cows, and this way, by hand, squeezing, and, you know, here's one for the cat, you know, this kind of thing. So in the fall of the year, if you dry up your cows, as the expression is, and you wait for them to freshen or have their next young ones in the following spring, you cut down your income a great deal. So my dad went around to a lot of the neighbors, asked them to pitch in, the two or three or four neighbors, and each help, you know, with the chores. And they said, we'd like to help, but, you know, we don't do this ourselves, milk cows and by hand. So they turned that down. So I ended up staying home, going to school in the days that were not annual or weekly Sabbaths, riding the bus in and such as that. About 2 weeks from the time the folks left here, I'd see them driving back up. Didn't have a phone either, so I didn't hear from them in that period of time. Anyway, my point is that by the time I was able to begin attending the feast, I was more than ready. And the first year was 1965 in Squaw Valley, and my wife Sandy was there as a student in the same class, 1965 to 1969. We sat in the Ambassador College band next to one another most of the years, 4 years, became very good friends, would talk to one another even about, you know, the special girl for me or the special guy for her, never realizing that our friendship was growing and that we would ultimately say, wow, you know, this is growing to friendship plus. And we've been married to close to 45 years now, and I know Mr. and Mrs. Fay are ahead of us by a number of years in all these areas, and that's wonderful and great. Well, I'm going to get into the subject matter today, and I did pack a tie. I didn't bring the sermon notes for this, so I've had to scramble after the feast to put the sermon together, but I did bring a tie. You can't see from where you are, but there's a little thing on this tie, lots of them. They are sheep. I brought my sheep tie because I have a great fondness for sheep. On our 320-acre farm, we had about 350 sheep in a flock. We had 80 to 100 cattle. We had a few horses, and the first early years, until I read in the Bible that we shouldn't have hogs and mentioned it to the family, we had about 200 hogs. The downside of my memories is experience with the hogs, because, wow, I would much rather work with sheep any day. Sheep are a lot of work, but they're teachable, they're gentle, They take a lot of care, but they're wonderful to work with. But hogs would just as soon run over you and get to the food that you're bringing them, like pails of grain, corn, or whatever. They have no respect, you know. They'll just do their thing. So this is a sermon that I have given a few times. Again, I've just put this back together in the last day or two. But I've given this subject a number of times because of the hands-on experience. I've also read the book that came out a few decades ago. The shepherd looks at Psalm 23, or at the 23rd Psalm, whatever the exact title of that is. Philip Keller was the author of that, and I think Mr. Fay has spoken on the subject a few times as well. That author, Philip Keller, was basing his experience on some decades, and very knowledgeable on his subject, but decades in East Africa. I think that was Kenya, perhaps, somewhere in East Africa, anyway. But still a lot of similarities and a lot of things that I could read through in that book and say, yes, you know, I had a sampling of that kind of experience for 12 years between ages of 6 and 18 growing up on the family farm. Well, let's turn to, guess what, Psalm 23. The title of the sermon is the 23rd Psalm and You and Me. What does it have for you and me in terms of instruction? Now, David, who is the author of this with God's inspiration, was a shepherd. He was a shepherd. In fact, remember, as he was engaged in this talk with King Saul in the Philistines, Goliath, the story of Goliath, you know, in 1 Samuel chapter 17, you read how David was incensed that the great God, you know, would be treated in such a way, disrespectful way, because this giant, Goliath, was taunting the nation of Israel, saying, bring out some strong man to fight with me. So David had brought supplies to his older brothers who were there in Saul's army. And here's an army on one side, like on a mountain here, and the Israelite army, and on the other side is the Philistine army, and here's this short distance between them, but the time must have seemed to drag on. What's going to happen with this challenge? So David spoke up to Saul as a young person, perhaps, you know, maybe up in his late teens. I don't know if we can establish the exact age, but David spoke up and he asked permission to represent Israel on behalf of the great eternal God. And here's what I'm coming to, that David, in mentioning that to Saul, when Saul said, you're just a kid, you're just a young person, you don't stand a chance, David mentioned in passing that the flock of sheep that he was tending were attacked on one occasion by a bear. And God gave David the strength and the wherewithal to defend that baby lamb that the bear wanted to have for a meal. You know, lamb chops and different cuts of... I like lamb. Some of you probably do as well. And then he mentioned also that on another occasion there was a lion. Now, my experience in the predators that threatened our sheep were not that sizable. A bear or a lion. They were much smaller. In some cases, they were dogs, wild dogs, or... dogs that just roamed, you know, throughout the farming area, and if you had sheep, they got entertainment out of that. You know, and in worst case scenario, they would kill a few of those sheep as fun, because some dogs seem to enjoy how frightened the sheep are and how they run and such as that. But here we are in Psalm 23. First of all, let's read through this as we begin this sermon. Again, the title of this is the 23rd Psalm, and You and Me, applying it to our lives today. David starts off. He says, the Lord, or the Eternal, is my shepherd. Now, I have read that this passage in the Bible, which is almost, or whatever it's worth, you know, midway through the Scriptures, of the Old Testament and New Testament, sort of in the middle of our Bibles today, but that the 23rd Psalm is one of the most familiar parts of the Bible to many people today. I have no idea how many can basically recite, or not necessarily word for word, but parts or much, or in a few cases, all of the very short 23rd Psalm. But taking the time to look at it more closely, to see what David was inspired to communicate, it teaches us, brethren, about the spiritual journey that God is directing us on. For Jesus Christ is the chief shepherd. We'll come to that in a couple of minutes in the scripture. He is a chief shepherd. It's called that, referred to that in the New Testament. And we are the sheep of his pasture, as the familiar passage in the book of Psalms tells us. So if we study the analogy that God inspired, and it's amazing, this thread is woven throughout the Bible. Isn't it interesting that righteous Abel was a keeper of sheep? All the way back, you know, mentioned in Genesis chapter 4. And we know Jacob, whose name later turned to changed to Israel, and just quite amazing. But the weaving of this theme throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament, is indeed amazing. There's much that we can learn. So David started off with this: "The Lord is my shepherd." Sounds familiar, doesn't it? But what does he mean? What does it mean to acknowledge that the Lord? You know, that Lord was the one we know as Christ, wasn't he? He was the God of the Old Testament. And Jesus Christ is referred to as the chief shepherd today. What was this relationship? What was David saying? He was saying, I am a sheep, spiritually. Because a shepherd is one who tends one or more flocks of sheep. And they can be huge. I mean, there are nations like where Mr. and Mrs. Fay lived years ago in Australia. I think the latest figure that I remember reading is excess of 120 million sheep. Now, we visited Australia and parts of Australia a number of years ago for the feast, and very enjoyable, wonderful country, but I don't remember that we saw nearly as many sheep there just because of where we were. We went more to the cities. But Australia is a huge, huge country. And we, a few years earlier, were in attendance at the feast in New Zealand. And there's a nation that has maybe 4 to 5 million people. And the latest thing I've seen that somebody's been eating or exporting, because it used to be 60 million sheep that I read in the late 1990s. The latest thing I've read is that's down to 50-some million sheep. That's still a lot of sheep. A lot of sheep. But there are countries that have many more than we do here in our country, the United States. Let's notice this in Psalm 23 again. The Lord is my shepherd, he says. So a shepherd is mentioned in a number of passages in this analogy of shepherd and his sheep. We'll look at a few of them right here a little bit later in the book of Psalms, close to where we are. Be coming back time after time to this passage in the 6 verses in Psalm 23. So if you want to put a marker there, some of you have one of these ribbons, you know, in your Bible. I seldom do anything else with that ribbon but use it for something like this. Maybe that's what it was designed for. I'm not quite sure. But Psalm 78, verses 52 and 53. But he made his own people go forth like sheep. That's an interesting thing to envision. If you've ever seen hundreds or maybe more than hundreds, because there are flocks of thousands in some places, like the countries that have millions and millions of them. If you've ever seen a sizable number of sheep together. And one thing that's intrigued me, I don't know how many times, like where we live, you know, we ended up after a number of decades in the Northwest and in Oregon, Salem, Eugene, and Roseburg currently. And that's where the Willamette Valley is. For those of you who have read Herbert W. Armstrong's autobiography, the Willamette Valley and the Fertile Valley and all of this, they've developed something over the years in the Willamette Valley that's astounded me, because in South Dakota, we put up so much hay for these woolly hay burners, the sheep, that we kept through the winter months, because the temperatures would go from one extreme to the other. In South Dakota, it can get 100 to 110 degrees in July or August, and in the wintertime, minus 30 to minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit. That's cold. And so sheep need much more prepared for them for the wintertime than in South Dakota than they do in places like Oregon. They're out there, and they're special grasses that are hardy, and they grow throughout the winter because Willamette Valley makes a claim to being the leading producer of grass seed in the world. And the soccer stuff, you know, in Brazil this summer, they were using the grass fields from the Willamette Valley in Oregon. I heard that a time or two, and the commentators, you know, mentioned that. But nonetheless, it's been exciting to me to be able to see those sheep throughout much of the year, because they could be out there in December and January, and they can have some little babies, the little lambs that we begin seeing in December and January. That was unthinkable in South Dakota, because the frigid temperatures were just hard to, you know, get them going, and they are fragile in the early hours and the first few days of their lives to such things as extreme cold. Many times we'd have to take them in if they were born during period of cold weather in the early spring and warm them up by the cook stove. Put them in a sizable cardboard box and warm them up for 4 or 5 hours, then take them back to Mama. We made sure that they knew who Mama was and that Mama knew them before we did this, or she would not have claimed them at all. But just a little difference that I found in from one part of the country and the other in regard to the care of the sheep. But in this passage, in Psalm 78, he made his own people go forth like sheep, guided them in the wilderness like a flock. But some of the sheep that I have noticed over the years are so much in tune with one another that there are leaders among the sheep. And you'll see them, if the majority of them are facing a certain direction, and this is oftentimes the case, that they graze in facing a certain direction, the leaders tend to be up at the front, and then they come behind that. And unlike that, you know, cows, they're in any kind of order, unless it's milk cows, then boss number one's got to go in the barn first, boss number two, they call that the horning order for them, but sheep are really regimented in terms of that kind of leader, and they want to follow. And you have some that are more confident than the others, because the typical or average sheep is quite shy, quite hesitant to take the lead. That's not the natural thing. But the natural thing that God created in the sheep is to follow, to be willing, to feel secure with the leadership that they see, the shepherd that takes care of them, and they know the shepherd's voice, and they can distinguish that, you know, from quite a distance away. They can distinguish whether that's someone that belongs with them or not. And so here, the other point I want to mention with this, like a flock in the wilderness, like a flock, and he led them safely so that they did not fear. This point is huge as far as understanding about sheep, because sheep are easily frightened. I have seen many times sheep frightened of their own shadow. You know, with the sun shining a certain way, their body casts a shadow. And they apparently think that that's a predator or something anyway to be afraid of. And they're terrified of their own shadow, literally. So they'll be jolted, you know, and go the other way, and so they can't see it anymore. But that's an illustration of the importance of this for a sheep and a group of sheep, we call a flock, and he led them safely. They need to feel safe. And so that they did not fear. If they don't feel safe and they are fearful, you have miserable, unhappy sheep. You have restless sheep. You have sheep that are not doing well at all. Psalm 80, verse 1, just over a page or so. It says here, "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel." Reference then to God as a shepherd That analogy of the shepherd and his flock. His flock then was Israel. O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock. Notice the terminology. Lead Joseph like a flock. So you and I can learn so much, including this point that's being stressed, about leadership. Are we led by Jesus Christ, the shepherd? Because if we get into it a little bit further, we'll see a distinction between sheep and goats. And we're all familiar, very likely, with Matthew chapter 25, where Jesus Christ talks about future time, separating the sheep from the goats. Why? Well, they're totally incompatible with one another. And their characteristics, physical sheep and physical goats. And Christ is drawing the spiritual analogy. Get there in a few minutes. But in another passage here in Psalm 95, this is a lovely one. We sing about this, and more, one of the more familiar psalms for many of us, especially a passage or two of it. Psalm 95, verses 6 and 7. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Eternal, our Maker, for He is our God. And notice this in Psalm 95, verse 7. And we are the people of His pasture, and the sheep of His hand. Beautiful passage indeed. Ezekiel 34, and I'll just briefly touch upon some of the verses because there's so much in God's Word on this subject, shepherds and their sheep. Ezekiel 34, verse 2, should not the shepherd feed the flock? Now, what do you mean? You don't go up to an adult sheep and say, open wide, please. Here. Big bite. No. He's not talking about that, but it's talking about you have to provide. Because if they're in too small an area, and we had to be careful of this, you're in too small an area, sheep will not only eat the grass, but they go right down to the nubbins, as it were, right down where the grass root, the root comes up with the first starting of the blade, and you can overgraze, and the sheep can pick up some diseases by doing that when it's that close cropping, because they're diligent to do what they're designed to do. For all, they have four stomachs. I don't know if it's really proper to call them stomachs, four chambers to the stomach, So it first goes here, then it goes to another one of those chambers for further digestion, and then loop up to his cud, they call it. They chew this cud, which is partially digested food, grass and such. And then they chew that for a while, which helps to digest it more, send it back down the track, and there it goes. But in verses 20 through 23, David is referred to. This is in Ezekiel 34, so this is after the time of David's death, hundreds of years later. But it's a prophecy for the future. Verses 20 through 23 of Ezekiel chapter 34. I'll just break into this in verse 23, Ezekiel 34, verse 23. I will establish one shepherd over them. God is saying about this, at the time, the second coming of Christ, beginning then, David will be resurrected at the second coming of Christ, and he will be a shepherd over a reunited Israel. The house of Judah, the house of Israel, reunited. At the time of the second coming of Jesus Christ, I will establish one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them. Here's this terminology again. David, the resurrected David. It says, he shall feed them, so provide what they need to nurture them, to feed them, so they can grow, so they can prosper. He shall feed them, my servant David, he shall feed them and be their shepherd. John chapter 10. John chapter 10 is a familiar passage, I think, to many of us, and along this line, some of the words will resonate in our memories of what Jesus Christ said. This section of the Gospel of John is about Jesus Christ as shepherd, spiritual shepherd. John chapter 10, verse 1, "Most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber." Now the picture he's just painted is describing the chaos that would result. Because this person, this thief or robber, doesn't belong there. And the sheep know it. And they're frightened. They're terrified. They cannot adequately protect themselves at all. They're helpless in that sense. And even the one that works with them, the shepherd, tends to do things with them that they are familiar with and gently breaks in some additional things because of the fact that sheep are easily frightened. But he climbs up some other way, that same as a thief and a robber. And it says in verse 4, John 10, verse 4, "And when he brings out his own sheep," sheep can be driven. Some of you have probably seen some of the old westerns where, you know, they had a sheep drive. And here they are riding on horses and the sheep, you know, out. That's not the way that sheep do the best. They have trouble with the ones that are leading because the sheep have that uncertainty. They're really uncomfortable about being driven. They prefer to be led because they have the security, the safety. They trust in that shepherd or those individuals along with the one who's the shepherd and those that work with the shepherd in cases of huge flocks that are working with them on a regular basis. Those that they know, they trust in them and they much prefer to be led. He brings them, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Powerful statement for us to consider, brethren, because we are spiritual sheep, and we are to follow Christ. Remember what Paul said? "Follow me as I follow Christ." For they know his voice. And you and I need, with God's help, to know that voice of Christ as his sheep. "Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." Quick example from when I was growing up. Occasionally, we wouldn't know in advance because, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't have a telephone, so people couldn't contact us that way. Oh, they could write a letter and say, "We'd like to come someday next week," or whatever. But we would have some that would make about a 300 to 400 mile journey from the western part of the state out toward Rapid City and all Black Hills in that area, all the way over to eastern South Dakota where our farm was, just 10 miles from the border with western Minnesota. And they would come to our farm to desire to buy some of the best of our sheep because you want to keep your strains, you know, healthy and vibrant and all of that. And so as they would come, they would drive up and they would introduce themselves and say, "Here's why we're here." And you know, we got used to a few visits like that. The point I want to make is that when we took them to see the sheep, first of all, one of us, myself or next to the youngest brother in the family, he and I did most of the work with the sheep. But we would go out there, and the sheep would feel comfortable. Then we'd have the visitors come, and the sheep would begin to just slowly, we were still there, and they were familiar with us, so they weren't totally frightened, but they began to be a bit uncomfortable. Here were some strangers coming, and as the strangers got closer, the sheep would kind of start walking in the opposite direction. What kind of welcome is that, you might think? But the folks who were coming to buy sheep dealt with sheep, so they expected that. They knew that, but that's a bit of an illustration of what Jesus Christ was mentioning out here. "They will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." So we could go among them, especially during the lambing season, and they knew our voice. And they wouldn't try to run or to get away. Now, they weren't as tame unless they were bottle lambs, you know, that we had fed cow's milk because the mama either didn't claim her babies or she didn't have adequate amount of milk for the two or three, you know, the twins or the triplets that she'd given birth to. But nonetheless, they would know the voice, and that meant a tremendous amount to them as a signal of whether to be at ease and resting or whether to be frightened and ready to run. Now, I shall not want, in the statement in the 23rd Psalm, David is saying, my shepherd provides for my needs, my care. He is the one that gives me what I need. He knows my needs. That's the kind of thing that David is communicating. Now, if the sheep want, in terms of not having adequate pasture and being under or malnourished, I guess is the term for it, and being disease-ridden and all, then you know they are in want and they're restless. They're restless and are not doing well at all. Verse 2, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. Now, there's something about this verse we needed to notice when it says to lie down. Sheep enjoy lying down. However, they will not lie down unless they are safe, they're secure, and they're ready to rest. Otherwise, they are restless. They kind of mill around or they pack together, sometimes too close together to one another, especially in larger flocks. So when David writes, he makes me to lie down, that's showing that David said his shepherd, God, provided for him so he could rest. He could have this type of experience that that a physical sheep would feel like it's safe to lie down and rest. I'm being cared for. I'm being protected. But the other part of this, in green pastures, the margin in the New King James Bible I'm using says pastures of tender grass. In pastures of tender grass. Now, sheep do a lot of eating. They go do a lot of chewing. And the typical sheep will not live much past 8 or 9 years. They don't have the longest lifespan of the domestic animals by any means. Part of their problem is that with all of the eating that they do, the chewing constantly, they wear their teeth down. And so if they live to be 8 to 10 years of age, they may have trouble feeding on some pasture. If it's sort of a hardened, encrusted type of grass, and the way that many types of grass get as the summer months go on and the heat increases, it gets brittle, you know, it gets just hard. But the tender grass is ideal for them. So that's important to understand, and that's what David is saying that he's doing. His shepherd, Jesus Christ, God is leading him like a physical shepherd would his physical flock of sheep into the tender grass. That's the easiest for them to eat, oftentimes the most nutritious as well. And there are areas that have a heavy dew overnight. That seems to help because sheep can survive for long periods of time with very little water if they have the heavy dew because they are early. They're out there before it's light. You get out there, you could see it's dark yet, and you see what's that just moving a little bit there? Oh, that's a sheep. That's another sheep. That's another sheep. They're out super early in the morning, and they are eating that grass that is loaded with water. It's easier for them to take it in that way, and again, they can go for without water for longer periods. We had a windmill. Didn't have electricity, but we had a windmill, and when the wind didn't blow for a day or two, then that's granted not very often in South Dakota, because even snow blows, you know, from one state to another next day, that where we were, wind could blow it to, over to Minnesota. They could deal with it there, that kind of thing, because it's drier. You know, not a wet snowfall typically. That is possible there, but oftentimes, in a number of months of the year, it's a drier snowfall. But anyway, this is illustrative of what he's saying here, that the sheep need those nutrients. They need that feed. So he leads me. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. Why would it be? Notice again, he says, he leads me. Sheep need to be led. But sheep need to follow. If they don't follow, and sometimes there is a sheep or two that wants to act a little bit contrary to the normal natural characteristics, and they have a curiosity. They want to see what's over in the neighbor's pasture. Or they want to get into where they see all this green stuff growing, kind of a dark green thing, and the early summer is just so tempting. Alfalfa. It's a type of hay. But it's deadly. If one of these independent-minded sheep manages to find a hole in the fence and get through that hole, maybe get down and crawl under it. Most sheep are not looking for that, but there are some that are looking to see if there's a hole there, so that they can enlarge their experience. But if they get into that alfalfa field and the one who's tending to them does not know it, and they've been in there even a couple of hours, that's a dead sheep. Too much of a good thing? Well, what's the problem? That type of hay, alfalfa, is very rich. Rich in its nutrients, but you can get too much if you're a sheep. And what the sheep do is they don't know when to stop. It's like we say a kid with candy. Well, you know, they're out there, and this is a wonderful treat. And so they fill up on it. But an hour or two later, it's like, whoa, you know, pop, pop, fizz, fizz. I need something for my stomach. Because it begins to swell in their stomach until they bloat. You know what bloat is? It gets to the point where they could literally burst, or they're ready to burst, you know, just fill up so much in the body cavity. So it's a tragedy that you certainly don't want to have happen. So there's great care to take care of the flock. But there are some cases where you have to dispense with that type of sheep. Now, in the book, I remember Mr. Keller, Philip Keller, called one particular sheep Mrs. Gadabout, because she was interested in getting out and teaching the others bad habits, like how to follow her in getting out of the pasture through the fences and into trouble. And so he relates in the book how after trying to work with Mrs. Gadabout for a short period of time, he regrettably decided that the best solution was to butcher her, to eat that sheep, because she was just too much trouble in a large, and he talked about very large flocks, larger than what I'm talking about in terms of 350, thousands, you know, of sheep in a flock, and you don't want that type of thing, because it leads to a lot of difficulty and trouble. He leads me beside the still waters. Now, the sheep, again, are easily frightened, and if they are asked to drink from water that is moving fast, that's a problem. That's a problem. I mean, that water might jump up and get them or whatever. You know, they just are not comfortable with that at all. So you'll look for the still waters where the sheep will not only drink, but where they will also feel comfortable. Now, our experience in South Dakota, we had a small creek, larger in the spring with the melting of snow and all, but it was a necessary thing for the sheep to cross that creek quite a number of times. They did not want to cross the creek. And the creek was only about 3 feet to 4 feet across, and not that deep. It was not rapids, you know, that we were dealing with or anything of the kind, but the water was moving. So they were terrified of that. So what to do? Well, that's why we had a couple of goats. Because we would put a halter on the goats. We didn't keep a billy goat around because of other problems there. But we had the female, the nanny, as you call them, and put a halter on one of the goats, and then take the goat and lead it, had a short leash on there, and lead it back and forth across like that a few times. And then one of our help, as far as the people taking care of the sheep, like my older brother, would get back behind the sheep, just stand behind them so that they would know, well, he's standing, he's facing us. Now, he's not turned the other way. What are we supposed to do? They get the point that they're supposed to go the other way. Here's the problem. But with the other one of us over there with that goat, we could do that a few times, and the sheep are watching, like every time it's a learning experience for them for some reason. And they look at that, what's that silly goat doing? It seemed to be what they were thinking. Until finally, the goat's having a great time, you know, back and forth. Oh, I can do this. This is a piece of cake. You know, this is wonderful. This is fun. Let's have some more fun. Well, then after doing that a few times, then we would talk to the sheep and say, moving to another side or something like that. Didn't matter, I don't think, what we said. Just that they heard the voice that's reassuring. And so then every one of those sheep, we should have had a camera and taken a picture. They're just kind of jumping a little bit as they got to that place, but they seem to be thinking, that goat can do it, maybe we can do it. That's what we're supposed to do. Look at that. Yeah, he's surviving. And so every one of them, 300-some sheep, would follow that goat. Wow. What were we lacking? Well, we didn't have dogs that were really good with sheep. Now, you know, Australia, they have dogs that are excellent trained. New Zealand, the same way. And there can be a flock of, you know, 1,000 or whatever, and some kind of disturbance going on way toward the middle of that flock. And those dogs are known by the flock of sheep because they work with them all the time. So the sheep are not frightened of those particular dogs that they know. And the dogs can get up on the backs of the sheep, and the sheep tend to group together like that. And it's an amazing sight to see the dogs. They're running. They're running, but their feet aren't touching the ground. They're on the backs of the sheep, and they go to where the trouble is. And just bark a time or two, and the sheep straighten up, and, you know, the dogs go back to their owner. That's an amazing thing to see. We never had that. You know, we had to devise a few other things I'm telling you about because we didn't have all the best possible things, you know. We were not prepared to have flock of 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 sheep. We struggle sometimes to take the adequate care of the 350. Our dogs were cattle dogs more, and they'd have to stand back just so the sheep would see, well, we don't go that way because, you know, we know those dogs, we don't like them too much, but they're there, so we won't go over there. Anyway, we'll go on with that, and it says here, he restores my soul. That's restoration at the Feast of Tabernacles. Hopefully each year, you know, a number of messages are given, and Mr. Fay gave a study on restoration at the Feast at Wisconsin Dells this year. But restoration is extremely important. And here's David bringing this into his analogy. He restores my soul. What's involved in that restoration? Well, there is the mending, the repairing, and the healing of emotions, of the psyche, as it were, of our spiritual side. You know, that spirit of man within us that God impregnates with his spirit. And all of that is important. And if we don't go through periodically restoration, we end up risking some serious problems. Just as David was bringing out here, this is a regular part of what he received. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now, in covering a subject that's in the focus education area, the subject of abuse. From what I've read and studied there, there's an application as well, that especially the emotional balance, the tranquility in a person's life, if there is not opportunity for restoration, then there's big trouble. And what ends up in some cases is the sadness of seeing someone commit suicide, take their own life, because they're so distraught emotionally. Oftentimes it centers on broken relationships. That's a huge area on the things of how they have been mistreated, how they have been, you know, told they're worthless and you know, the wish you were never born, and horrible statements like that. So as they go through struggles and problems and challenges in their lives, they don't have any anchor. They need restoration. They need that restoration that comes through the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ. And to read the promises in God's word that can help us through those very, very difficult times. Now, sheep, again, are so fearful. And remember the instruction in Luke 12, verse 32. I think this is familiar scripture. Luke 12, verse 32. Jesus Christ said, "Fear not, little flock." Now, when you're understanding more how important it is to deal with fear and to remove that in the life of physical sheep, and you apply that to us spiritually as spiritual sheep in God's flock. "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." A few distinctions here now between sheep and goats. Sheep and goats, very different. Matthew 25, you know, shows it's necessary to separate the sheep from the goats. Jesus Christ will do that. The sheep representing there in that parable, the righteous ones, the ones who followed God, who desire God's way and to be in God's kingdom. The spiritual goats representing those who have characteristics that apply so often to physical goats. Very aggressive. Goats can be very aggressive. They can be cocky. You know, they love to get up above things and just prance around. I worked with a minister in the early years after getting out of college, and we had a vehicle, and we drove up to visit some folks, and they had some goats. We were inside talking with these members, and we heard something going on outside, and looked through the window, and here there were a couple of goats on the minister's new car. Back and forth, you know, it was a station wagon, and they went back and forth, and they're incredible on their balance. They never fell off, but, you know, they went as fast as they could and then screeched to a stop. And imagine what that was doing to that new finish on that car. I was an assistant, and I had to make double time to get out there and take care of that problem. Get those goats off that car. But a quick story illustrates a characteristic. Goats love that. They're having fun to get up on things, to climb. You know, they can stand on their hind legs, and they can jump about that high off their hind legs, that about that high off the ground, just from standing. And they'll grab up and reach a branch, reach leaves, and pull that branch with leaves on down. Standing, when I raised them, they were standing in lush grass about that tall. That's a last resort, because goats want to browse, and they want excitement, you know, so those leaves up there, a lot more tempting, or what's outside their pasture on the other side, so they can go over. And fall of the year, there are wonderful, good color in this diet for them. The leaves, you know, are different colors of the change in the fall. And had more trouble that time of the year than any other time keeping the goats in the electric fence. Because they could go stand, look over that for a little bit, and it got too overwhelming, too desires. So they, whoop, like that, right over a 4 or 5 foot fence, no problem. And then I'd get after him, say, "Hey, no, no." And they know what they had done. They look kind of guilty. And then they whoop, right back over and in the fence. You know? But goats are really self-reliant. They're cocky. They're self-confident. They're bold. They want to be in charge. And they can be incredibly stubborn. But on the other hand, they can be very smart. They can watch a human do something one time, and they can pick it up. Like how to unlatch or unlatch a gate, and to do various other things. They're very observant, and they pick it up. They're just what a sheep could never do. the goat has that interest in trying and working on it until he succeeds. Now, the characteristics for sheep, they tend to be shy and timid, easily frightened, but they're humble and teachable compared to the goat that, you know, thinks he's big enough. I had goats that would challenge any, even large dogs that would come over, and they'd get under that electric fence. They knew, you know, to crawl under it. So they, once in a while, they made a mistake and they'd yelp, you know, and the electric wire would get them. But they'd get inside the pen with the goats. And instead of turning and running terrified like sheep would, the goats would look at them like, oh, you don't belong in here. And they'd come charging after the dogs, and the dogs would get back underneath that fence. And, whoa. Now, if they had a bunch of wild dogs and a pack of them, it would have had some real problems. But individual single dog at a time or one or two coming like that, it was the dogs that ran from the goats. So it illustrates quite a difference for sure. Let's go on with this in the 23rd Psalm. It says, though, in verse 4, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Now, all of this description that David is giving is picturing a journey, like in an annual period of time, like in a year's period of time. And you start off, you know, the babies come generally in the spring of the year, and they're able to walk in just a matter of hours, and to run in a matter of a few more hours or a day or two, and they grow quickly, but they do need protection, they do need care. But as they go to the summer pastures, you know, it needs to be like we read about here, and it makes me to lie down in green pastures, because they respond in their growth, and they go through this cycle. And then you come to the summer of the year, and you've had some problems, and that's when they head up to the higher altitudes, because as the temperatures increase in the period of time from early spring and late spring on into the summer, it's a period of time of the growth and development of many of the pests, you know, the insects and such that will plague sheep so much. They just torture them, torment them relentlessly, you know, around their eyes and their posterior and in their wool. You know, you could separate the wool and get it down there, and you find ticks, or you find many other things that have gotten on them. And so they have to be treated. We'll see that here as we go down a few verses later. Because if they're not, they do very poorly, and they can even die. It's that serious, potentially, that they can die from if they're not helped with those insects that terrorize them or pester them. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Now, valley indicates something, you know, as far as topography, doesn't it? Just like in the Willamette Valley, we can drive down the interstate and we can look over to the right-hand side, whichever way we're going, if that way, and we can look over to the left side. We see where the valley basically ends and where the mountains on one side and then the valleys in between and the mountains on the other side. But valleys indicate that you've got other topological the topography is different in other ways too. So you can have not only valleys, but you can have hills, you can have gulches, you can have cliffs. And sheep are not prepared to handle these things on their own. They can get stuck in thickets. You know, they can get stuck because they're not adept for one thing, but also because they have wool, and that wool can stick in. You know, they can get so that they're lodged in there. They're not going anywhere. They'll die. Either a predator will get them, or they'll die if they're not discovered, you know, within, say, a few days' time. So he's talking about some of the difficulties, some of the dangers. You and I can understand this, that there are different problems that we encounter as we go through our spiritual journey toward the kingdom of God. There are setbacks or unforeseen circumstances. There can be accidents. There can be diseases. There can be, you know, any number of challenges, of things that happen to us. And so David is describing this, having had the experience with physical sheep. Now he's talking about his relationship with God, and how, in a similar way, he is helped in his difficult times. David had some health problems, some serious ones toward the end of his life, didn't he? And if you've noticed, in reading the Bible, he died at age 70. But he had gone through an active life. He had gone through, you know, a period of time where he was on the run from King Saul and the king's men who wanted to do David in, who wanted to kill him because they saw him as competition. So he hid out, you know, he was in caves. He was in, you know, cold, damp conditions. He was in situations where maybe David had arthritis and things like that. I don't know. We do know that, I love that, I read this years ago in the old King James, his body gat him no heat. Meaning circulation problems, right? He didn't feel warm, he felt chilled, cold. And had some problems along that line. And so this is what David is talking about, how God will provide for us. Our chief shepherd, Jesus Christ, is mindful of what our needs are and what we're going through. For you are with me, just as it's important to those physical sheep that their shepherd be with them. It's extremely important, David is saying, that God is with us. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now, here are two implements, two things. You know, the staff, kind of crook on the end here and walking like that. What can you do with the staff? Well, a number of things. You can deliver an animal, like a lamb from some kind of thing. You can use that crook. That, and Philip Keller talks about that in his book, and using that, reach down, that crook is just about the right shape and all as to go around the body of a small lamb and begin to extricate it from its difficulties. If it's caught in the brambles of the brush or it's someplace like that, you know, you can use a staff, or maybe the rod is even better for this, and part the layers of the wool and get down with that and separate that. You look at the skin, the hide of the sheep that's down there, you know, on the body, just the outside of the body. Now, why is that important? Because you see what's going on in terms of any insects, ticks, and various other things that are right there where, you know, the skin, the hide meets the wool that's growing out of that. And so these implements were very important. I'm not sure how David handled the lion and the bear. He doesn't give us the details. We know he had God's direction, God's guidance, but that's a remarkable thing. You have a predator of that size, and when a bear wants to eat, I think he's made up his mind. You know, he's hungry. Takes something to stop him. A lion, the same way. God was with David, and so David understood his subject, you know, just extremely well. Verse 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. What is this table that would prepare? Well, it seems to be indicating that as you go up into the higher elevations, there are areas that have sort of a flatter surface there, a mesa or, you know, plateau or whatever. Where there are pastures up there that grow at a higher altitude, thus it's cooler up there. Even in the summertime, it's cooler, and that's the case in some of those areas that have the elevation, and you can see those sheep in some cases way up there. I remember we drove a couple thousand miles, and we visited New Zealand, and we went by so many areas where the sheep are way up there, and they look pretty small, way up toward the top of those hills and small mountains where they were grazing, and it's an amazing thing. But, you know, there's something about that the shepherd needs to be aware of, because sheep are not good with their balance. And David talks about a sheep that's having trouble that way. And we call it a cast sheep. Notice this in Psalm 42, verse 5. Psalm 42, verse 5. We had this happen on our farm a number of times, but we had so few, 350 sheep, compared to the huge flocks of thousands and thousands that are sometimes the case. but in Psalm 42, verse 5. David said, "Why are you cast down, O my soul?" You know, we can read that. We can get the general idea that, yeah, he's facing some hard times and difficulties. But he's making a reference to something that ties in with a shepherd's experience. Because when a sheep loses its balance, and sometimes it doesn't take much of a slant or slope, you know, it lies down, before it cannot get up, it doesn't have the agility, doesn't have the ability to right itself and get its legs under it, you will not find a goat having this problem. Goats are totally different. They don't get cast down, losing their balance. They have an incredible sense of balance. But the sheep will get that way. And sometimes it's some of the larger sheep with more bulk on their body that tend to have a greater problem than those who are not that sizable. But once they're in that situation, they are helpless. But they don't even know enough, the way God has created them, to sound off and to cry. You know, like the babies for sheep and babies, you know, lambs there, but babies of different animals, they will know to cry. Cry for mama, you know, help, I need help. But these sheep usually don't make a sound that you can hear. You have got to be on the ball, as we say. You've got to be watchful and know your flock and that it's safe. Because it doesn't take very long. 2 to 3 hours is all it would take in that kind of condition. Again, the system works against themselves because they eat so much grass and it's going through the digestive process and it's got the gastric juices working and all. And that builds up. And when they're lying there on their side, they can't get any relief from it. So it's a matter of hours sometimes till, well, they're really at death's door. And they will die in that condition. So it's very serious. But David uses this. He says, "Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you disquieted within me?" Notice what he says, "Hope in God." So brethren, when you and I find ourselves cast down, can we recognize it? We should. And we should recognize that if we're not careful, our thinking might become irrational. We might get depressed. You know, as if, well, if God wanted to heal me, he would have healed me by now. Not good thinking. Because we need to wait on God. It's true that there are some things that will be healed, like in the resurrection. But it's in God's hands. And we're learning, you know, by the problems, the difficulties, and the struggles that we go through. But we must not give up hope. David continually said, "My hope is in the Lord my God. He will rescue me. He will intervene in my lives." Now, it says this, cast down again in verse 6 of Psalm 42. "O my God, my soul is cast down within me. Therefore I will remember you from the land of Jordan, from the heights of Hermon, a region east somewhere from the Jordan River. And he says again down in verse 11 of Psalm 42, "Why are you cast down, O my soul?" He's recognizing the problem, the difficulty. Remember times like that after his experience, the bad experience there? Mentioned in Psalm 51, it was repenting of the adultery with Bathsheba. Tough time. But God did not give up on David. And David, as God knew how to work with him as a shepherd, sent Nathan the prophet. And he told the perfect story. That bang, you know, when he told that, when Nathan the prophet told that story, David said, "Surely that man shall be put to death." And then what came next? Nathan said, "But you're that man." You know, had to be a real shock. But what's so amazing that David proceeded then to repent and repent deeply. Never repeated that sin. But he learned undoubtedly major, major lessons. The death of his son. What's his name again? The one that had the hair that grew like some of us wish we could do just a little bit like that, you know. Absalom, you know. And remember what he said? Absalom, my son, my son. Loved him so very much, even though Absalom reached a point where he was impatient for his dad, David, to die. He wanted to take over. But David still loved his son. Psalm 80, verses 1 through 7. Restore us, O Lord, Shepherd of Israel, he says there. And it's also in Psalm 80, it's mentioned in verses 3, 7, and 19. You know, about this restoration, God's intervention in our lives. There is something about the predators, you know, that sheep are not expecting. They're not expecting any predators. They want to just go about their business. They want to be at peace. They want to be restful. They, you know, love the contact, the assurance from those who work with them and are trusted by them. But it can come very suddenly. Acts chapter 20, verse 29. The Apostle Paul was talking to a number of elders, you know, that he had known and worked with while he was in Ephesus. And he had talked with them and encouraged them and exhorted them. And he was just ready to hug, say goodbye, and leave, not knowing if he would see them again in this life. And then he was inspired to give this warning. And he said, and some of you, fellow elders, will be like ravenous wolves in the flock. That's quite a warning. And for any of us as elders, you know, we've got to be sure that we're following that chief shepherd and doing our job in helping, in gently caring for and nurturing the people of God or the flock of God. It's an awesome responsibility, and it's a very important one to do it with God's guidance, His direction. 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and of a sound mind. Why do I read that? Not only because sheep have so many fears, if they could count, they'd have trouble counting them. You know, my mother used to say, if I couldn't sleep, I was, you know, pre-teenage or whatever, and I was kind of restless at night for whatever reason, and I couldn't sleep, well, I'd say, but I can't sleep, and she would say, well, just count sheep until you fall asleep. I've been working with the sheep for hours that day. I didn't want to count sheep in my mind, you know, here's one going, there's another one jumping, another one over that little stream of water. That was an expression, but God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And so just like the sheep can gain assurance and hope, confidence and faith through the trust in their shepherd, you and I can do that through our hope, assurance, faith, and trust in the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ, our Savior and our soon coming King and ruler. Hebrews 13 verse 5 says, for He Himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. A flock that has been forsaken, that's been left, is in big, big trouble. They're predators, they're diseases, they're, you know, all kinds of things for that flock of sheep. Now he gets down to the very end of this as we wrap it up, and this is quite a journey that David has been describing, and just as we have it in the 23rd Psalm, a few, six short, relatively short verses. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. Again, the pests, the insects, the things that bother, just torment sheep. What we would do is about three times, you know, from the beginning, early beginning of the summer weather and the warmer weather. The South Dakota is spring one day and summer the next, well, almost like that. It is definitely winter-like, and snow in the ground in the month of May begins. And by the end of May, Memorial Day, it's up oftentimes in the 80s. People are fainting from, you know, I had some that saw faint, like in the cemeteries on services, you know, Memorial Day services
out of the cemetery. In the same month, from snow on the ground at the beginning of the month of May, and then hot conditions in the 80s already by the end of May. So that's tough to deal with. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. We mixed up a mixture, and I don't remember all the things, but whether there's linseed oil in there or just a bunch of ingredients in there that treat. So you have a liquid solution and you have like a vat or a trough, it looks like. And you have the sheep come into that, lead them into that, and then you dip them down. They're somewhat uncomfortable about it, but it goes very quickly. And then you put them out the other end. And the next one, who's next, who's next, this kind of thing, till everyone is treated. And they're immersed in that, so all of their wool is covered, even up here, you know. And they know enough to close their eyes to this and there. And what a difference it makes. And then a month or so later, we do it all over again to protect them, to help them to be healthy, and help them, you know, to go through a wonderful experience as they grow up. The last part of this, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. So David is related quite a bit in just a few words here, but notice the positive, upbeat conclusion. He says, surely. He's confident. Why? Because the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ, is more than capable. He knows what we need much more than we do. He knows just how to nurture us, just how to encourage us, just how to work with us in whatever situations we are in. Surely goodness and mercy. Notice those attributes. David is referring to this, to his shepherd, the one we know as Jesus Christ. Surely his goodness and his mercy. And that's a tremendous amount there to be thankful for, isn't it? That's God's goodness. He looks down upon us and he sees precious future sons and daughters in his kingdom. It's a thrilling thing, no doubt, to God. And for us to realize the kind of care that we have in the hands of God. In the sermonette, I noticed the last part of Matthew 11 was covered, about where Jesus said, come to me, you who are heavily burdened, and I will give you rest, just paraphrasing from that. So sheep are brought back then to the home area where they have shelter and they have protection during the winter months. And then after that, in the spring, the cycle starts all over again. Kind of like for you and me, brethren, as we go through God's plan each year, as evidenced by the annual holy days. And they began when? In the spring of the year. And we go through from Passover, the days of unleavened bread, and then some weeks later, you know, to Pentecost. And then we wait with anticipation for the fall days to begin, with the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the great Feast of Tabernacles, and then that eighth day or last great day. Wow! And that's inspiring. Then we wait from this time of the year now with anticipation for the cycle to start over again in the spring. And each year, it seems like we learn more and more as we continue this incredible odyssey, this spiritual journey to the kingdom of God. It's been very nice to be with all of you, brethren, and seeing you this year, and God be with you.